This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. It's one of the underpinnings of democracy. Informed citizens make better voters and better decisions. If you're wrong, all it takes is the facts and you change your mind. That's the popular belief, anyway. The problem, as we've been hearing, is that's not always the case, especially when it comes to very partisan issues. Have the facts ever convinced you to change your mind? How did it happen? Call and tell us your story. Email is talk@npr.org. The phone number, 800-989-8255. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Our guests are Dana Milbank, national political columnist for The Washington Post, and Brendan Nyhan, a health policy researcher at the University of Michigan. He recently published a study called When Corrections Fail, The Persistence of Political Misperceptions. You can find a link to that on our website. Again, that's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Brendan Nyhan, why is it that highly partisan issues seem to be most subject to this backfire phenomenon?
Well, I think that the cases where people care most about the actual outcome of the debate. So, you know, if you're going to buy a refrigerator at the store, you really don't care except to buy a good refrigerator. But in the case of something like your political views, you don't just care about accuracy. You care about you essentially have a team in a lot of cases, right? If you're either a Republican or a Democrat, a liberal or a conservative. And so you're filtering all the information you receive, you know, through that prism. And so what you end up getting is this real divergence on all sorts of issues, not just on, you know, what policies we should adopt as a country, but on actually the underlying facts. And that makes it really hard to have a debate. You know, if one side says, you know, the sky is blue and one side says the sky is purple, well, we have a pretty hard time agreeing on the premises to actually have a conversation.
It's interesting you use the word teams. A lot of us are passionate supporters of one team or another, but the issue is generally resolved by the World Series or when they play each other, that we can come away and say, well, we'll get you again next year.
Yeah, for a certain portion of the electorate, it is almost like a team sport. And if these are the people you identify with and align yourself with, and you know you watch your team arguing on cable news and whatever, then it's going to be natural to want to support your team, right? And so you get these kind of queuing effects where the elites on your side of the aisle are telling you something, and you really do want to believe it. And I think that's an important point in this conversation is it's not. It's not something about blaming voters. You know, most people don't have a ton of time to check every single thing they hear about politics. You know, I mean, one of the things that I've advocated is holding elites responsible for putting this information out there in the first place. And the kind of fact checking that Dana has done is one way to do that. And even if it isn't effective at changing people's minds out there, maybe it makes people think twice about putting the information out there in the first place.
And Dana, that suggests that there is the shame factor if you can hold the elites responsible for putting out information that's just, well, flat wrong. Maybe they can then tell their supporters. I might have missed that one.
Well, I think it's useful to attempt to do that. I'm kind of doubtful that it actually has any effect. I think what's really happening underneath this is, you know, if you look at surveys all across the board, there's declining trust in all of the institutions, whether that's in government, whether that's in the press, whether that's with church, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Americans don't believe anything. So that gives rise to any old wacky conspiracy theory. And when there are efforts to try to rein this in and said, no, let's agree on the facts, things have sprung up like PolitiFact, that the St. Petersburg Times, they just won a Pulitzer Prize for it, and Fact Check that's through the University of Pennsylvania. They'll come out and say, no, here are the facts, this is how it is, and objectively, that's how it is. Except the people who have been just told that their facts are wrong by Fact Check are going to go out and attack Fact Check. So there's no way to sort of referee this because it's not actually grounded in fact anymore, and nobody trusts anybody.
Let's see if we get another caller on the line. Let's go to Andrew. Andrew with us from Blacksburg in Virginia.
Hey, I think the one issue that first came to my mind was nuclear energy. And I think that's still one where, you know, it's even more imperative, I think, now, especially with our energy future being discussed a lot in the wake of the BP oil spill. I used to be an environmental activist. I was party secretary with the Green Party here, actually. That was when I was in college. And I think it was once I got out of college and once I wasn't as insulated, I think, in the people that I hung around so much, and I started... I had a couple friends. I moved after college, and I had a couple friends that we were discussing this issue one day, and they were telling me some about in their travels and having been over in Europe where they actually use a lot more of nuclear energy. And when you come down and look at it, you look at the cost of nuclear energy versus the cost of some of the other things we were considering, and the environmental cost of things like coal and oil, as we're seeing right now, it's actually got a very good track record. People like to fixate on Three Mile Island, but, I mean, that's
yeah, it's there's still that waste issue to deal with there, Andrew. But
it's true. But there's no perfect solution. But still, when you look at the total picture, while there is no perfect solution, it is still it's probably the best mass production option that we have right now, in my opinion.
All right, Andrew. Thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it. And Brendan Nyhan, I wonder, is there any evidence that over time, as things become perhaps less emotional, the metaphorical, the devil's horns and the tail come off the issue and people are able to reconsider?
It's certainly possible. You know, we saw something like this with weapons of mass destruction. You know, that was one of the primary rationales for the war in Iraq, and so even after that rationale had largely been disproven, people hung on to it. But over time, we saw this kind of flattening out as people shifted onto other rationales for the war, or even came to oppose it. So I think as these issues become less salient, people can admit maybe that they were wrong, but that takes a long time, and in a lot of cases, the damage has already been done.
I suspect people admit that mistakes were made, not necessarily that
right.
They were wrong. Here's an email from Johan in Dundas in Ontario, Canada. I'm reading Christopher Hitchens' book, God is Not Great Currently, so this phenomenon of evidence rejection is especially relevant to me right now. Are people who adhere to fundamentalist religions more likely to reject evidence and facts in favor of their strongly held views, religious or otherwise? Brendan, is this restricted to one worldview or one political ideology?
I don't think so. I don't think so. There are people who have made that case in the psychological and political science literatures, but I think the jury is still out. And the conclusion that my co-author and I came to is that this is really a human problem. And we conducted experiments where we found similar resistance to evidence among liberals. And there's other examples like that out there as well.
Well, let's go next to Chrissy. Chrissy with us from San Francisco.
Yes, I'm just calling to say I changed my mind on two different issues. One about gun ownership. I was originally from Utah, and I didn't think that people should be able to have guns, and I just thought people were crazy to actually have their own guns. And then I started talking to more people and kind of educated myself, and it turned out the man that I married, his father makes bullets, and I went out shooting, and I actually think that people should be able to own their own guns. Of course, I think background checks, and there needs to be definitely some controls over that, but I changed my mind pretty dramatically just through self-education. And then I also changed my point of view on the death penalty. I really believe that people, if they were convicted, they were dead wrong, and they really should be killed. And then I educated myself again, and I just don't really believe in the death penalty at all. I just don't think that everyone has the same upbringing, the same choices, the same monetary backgrounds, and so I'm really against the death penalty now. So I've changed my point of view just really through, I think, self-education and actually really great programs like this that are offered to us through NPR.
Well, Chrissy, that's very kind of you to say. Thank you very much for that. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Here's an email from Patrick in Puyallup in Washington. This topic is so important, I feel, points to the heart of so many of today's social problems, why so much doesn't get done in politics. The lack of humility makes it hard to take an honest look at one's own views and opinions, causing people to stick with talking lines they know to be contrary to the facts. And Dana, getting back to the immigration issue and the state of Arizona, talking lines they know to be contrary to the facts? I'm not sure that's right.
I think in some cases that is right. It's important to make a distinction between beliefs that people hold and the facts. So a lot of the emailers and the callers have spoken about, evolution or nuclear energy or guns and the death penalty. Obviously, people can have very different opinions, and there should be a debate on all of these things. There should be a common body of facts that everybody can agree on and yet have a difference of opinion. I think, and that's certainly the case with immigration as well, but I think when you have a public figure like John McCain saying Phoenix, the largest city in his own state, is the number two kidnapping capital in the world, it's already been disproven by neutral independent parties. And he continues to say it. I mean, look, you can't say the man's lying because you don't know what's going on inside his head. But you have to say he certainly should know by now that what he's saying is false, yet he continues to say it.
The phenomenon also plays out every day in the office of NPR's ombudsman. Alicia Shepard receives and responds to listener comments and complaints about NPR News, those so infrequent complaints, and she joins us here in Studio 3A. Lisa, nice to have you back on the program.
Thank you.
And where do you see this? Give us an example of how this manifests itself.
Well, I wanted to follow up, I will, but with what Dana said, beliefs versus facts, I think it's the context that they selectively hear. And it's just phenomenal to me how I can have people call about the same story and yet have heard it so differently. And I think that that plays into something called the hostile media effect,
mm-hmm.
which is that the more neutral a news story is, the more people are likely to bring their own beliefs and biases and points of view towards that story, and they hear it very selectively.
This used to be more difficult in the old days when we just had our own memories of audio recordings. These days, there are transcripts.
There are transcripts, and then there's Jon Stewart to remind people what what they said once.
Give us an example of how this manifests in your office.
Well, for example, there was a story last week about Netanyahu's visit to the White House, and in it, the one particular listener was very upset and said that this story was very biased, and he said because it only quoted these people. And then I went back and listened, and I spoke with Ari Shapiro, who had done this story, and he said, well, I also quoted, and he named two other people who represented that man's views. But he falls into that hostile media effect where he listened very selectively and focused on that. And he was also influenced potentially, or I won't say he was, but he could have been, by a piece that was on the National Review online, particularly criticizing that story. So sometimes it's not even a matter of whether they heard the story. It may be something they've read or a listserv that they're on that says, contact the ombudsman or NPR did this today.
I wonder, Dana Milbank, does it help when your stories are always in black and white?
Well, it certainly helps people come up with reasons to disagree with it. It is nice to be able to point to something and say, okay, show me where the complaint is. I mean, there's a difference between a factual error and just somebody not agreeing with you or feeling that you sort of stack the deck one way or the other. If there is a factual error, we want to run a correction. If they're just saying I didn't like what you wrote, well, then you maybe should write a letter to the editor, because that's a disagreement of opinion as opposed to a disagreement over fact.
Dana Milbank, national political columnist with the Washington Post, also with us. Brendan Nyhan, a Robert Wood Johnson scholar in health policy research at the University of Michigan, and Lisa Shepard, NPR ombudsman. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Brendan Nyhan, I wanted to, this is, as I read in your account, a very young field of inquiry.
It is. You know, political science, for a long time, we focused on things like, could you name all the Supreme Court justices? How many years does a senator serve for? Things like that. And, you know, you can do those surveys and you find that people don't know a lot of those things. But I'm not sure it really matters so much whether you know those things. At best, they're a proxy for some, you know, more general sense of sophistication about politics. But these misperceptions, you know, we haven't studied them, and they are important because people are changing their minds in some cases based on that, you know, it's influencing their vote, it's influencing their opinion. They're not just holding these misperceptions, they're holding them actually in some cases more confidently than people who have the correct view.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of the reason they're so hard to dissuade.
And Lisa Shepard, I'm not going to argue that NPR is never wrong, never makes mistakes, but have there been phenomena where you say, dear reader, if you take a look at the transcript of this story, and I've talked to the reporter, and you see that the other side that you complained was not represented was represented, have they come back and said, oh, I'm sorry, I was wrong?
I have to say, very rarely does that happen. It's usually, but you didn't consider this or you didn't consider that. I mean, sometimes the transcript is tremendous evidence that it was considered. But but Mr. Nyhan talked mm-hmm. about misperceptions, and I still think it goes back to clinging to your personal beliefs and hearing and reading things through the prism of your personal beliefs.
Let's get one more caller in. This is Pat. Pat with us from Doylestown, Pennsylvania.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was a member of the Born Again Christian community, and I thought that I needed to have a good understanding of other people's point of views. So I took it upon myself to read other holy books, upon which I decided that there is more to it than I realized, and I am now a pluralist. So I did change my mind.
A pluralist believes in, I gather, many things.
Yes, yes.
And that no one book has supremacy over another.
I've come to the conclusion that when you're dealing with the infinite, it's really just foolish to think that anybody has the answer. You know, there's more. It's just too big.
And it was just through self-education that you came to this conclusion?
Yes. I read The Tao Te Ching. I started with thinking I was going to tear it apart, and it didn't happen. And then the Bhagavad Gita, which is fabulous. I read the Book of Mormon and the Koran and probably some others that aren't coming to me, lesser books. And there's just, you know, people are looking for truth, and I think it's a mistake. I was mistaken to think that it was contained in one belief system.
All right, well,
put it that way.
Truth is something that we can all have an opinion and argue about. Facts, however, we shouldn't altogether disagree about that. Here's a nice email, this from Scott Nessler, and he quotes Ralph Waldo Emerson. Every fact is related on one side to sensation and on the other to morals. The game of thought is on the appearance of one of these two sides to find the other, given the upper to find the underside. He also quotes himself. It's a fact that facts are misused, and Mark Twain, get your facts first, and then you can distort them as you please. So that may be the lesson here. Brendan Nyhan, thank you so much for your time today, and good luck.